Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite video games. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
I am stupendous. Be stupendified!
I started rereading a bunch of old comics from like the 70s, because I've had nothing to do for the last week, because I can't go anywhere or do anything. And it is amazing how many words they made up specifically for like heroes to say back then. We should start doing that every week. Just make up a new word, because why not?
Like what?
I don't know. I have to give it some thought. Maybe by the end of this podcast, we'll figure one. But you guys aren't here to hear about that. Or maybe you are. I don't know. I don't run your life. But we're going to be talking about something that, well, is a little bit exciting. Over the last week, we did receive news of what the next Warcraft expansion is going to be. And it is aptly titled Dragonflight. It is what something we've been speculating for a long time. And I think that a lot of people are. It's not really that much of a surprise. But we will be returning to the Dragon Isles. It does seem to be quite a bit more involved than maybe we originally made guesses of. But there's definitely some things there, like Titan facilities, probably some secrets to that of the original, like, early days of the Dragonflight themselves. So we thought it would be a good idea to maybe spend some time talking, well, about the Dragonflights. Where they've been, what we know they've been up to, and what might potentially be story threads that get pulled on in the future. Matt, where do you think we should start?
Spain, 1736. I think one of the things that's interesting here is at the end of Cataclysm, we basically kind of had a door shut on the Dragonflights. The Aspects had given up their powers. So they were they were still big dragons that were really old and knew a lot of stuff and weren't very powerful because they were big dragons, but they didn't have the aspect power anymore. And so dragons sort of went on the back foot. We saw in Legion, for instance, that the blue dragons were having a hard time. They couldn't have new clutches of eggs. They were trying to raise the last generation of eggs and they couldn't have any more.
Which is not an uncommon problem.
Which a lot of us felt like, but that was the story. We also saw Ysera die in Legion.
Yep.
And so in following the rest of Legion and in Battle for Azeroth, we saw the Dragonflights trying to figure out, what are we? What are we doing? How are we? What is our future going to be? Do we have one? For example, Melithra, who we originally saw all the way back in ICC. Icecrown Citadel. She was the green dragon that we had to heal. It was the fight where instead of, you know, DPSing, it was about healing the boss and DPSing the adds to keep them from getting to her and making her worse. until she could get to a certain point, until you'd healed her enough that she burst forth and could wreck everything. And you know, that's how the fight went. It was the fight where the healers were like, basically, it was their time to shine. She shows up in Battle for Azeroth as well. I mean, and she's basically the de facto leader of the Emerald Dragonflight.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Ysera's dead, and she's the eldest daughter, and yeah, that's her job. That's her role. And it was interesting to see, and we had Rathian, of course, and also Ebonhorn, who we also met in Legion, the two uncorrupted black dragons. Although Ebonhorn isn't as lucky as Rathian in that he's still susceptible to their whispers of the old gods. Sorry, I should have thrown that in there. But, you know, as long as he's in a protected place, he's okay. He's not like crazy cuckoo pants. And the two of them had kind of a interesting relation. I thought that was really actually pretty nice that Ebonhorn and Rathian ultimately got along and, you know, exchanged, if not pleasantries, they recognized each other as black dragons. And, you know, Rathian didn't try to kill him or anything because he had a tendency to kill other black dragons when we first saw him, but he's chilled out on that, it seems. So there was a lot of uncertainty, and we were all kind of expected. Rathian told us in Battle for Azeroth, he made a point of saying, I'm trying to find the Dragon Isles, but I can't find them. I've looked around. I don't know where they are. Nobody will tell me anything. And in the setup here, the first thing we found out when we were like watching the announcement video is that it wasn't a question of them not telling him. They couldn't tell him because they didn't know where it was.
It was very similar to like how in Mist of Pandaria, the Pandaria was cut off from the rest of the world, right? Like surrounded by an impenetrable mist.
The only Pandaren we knew were the ones who were on the Wandering Isle.
Yep.
And that, like Chen and all those, they hadn't been to Pandaria either. They were part of an area that had broken off just before the mist came down. So they had no way there either. So that was interesting. And it is a similar situation, except in this case, it's not. The way that it went in Pandaria was the last emperor essentially used the power of the Shah. Like, he actually used the power of the Shah to do it. That was how he did it. That's what the mists were. That's why the land was so tied to the Shah and the Shah were so tied to the land. So in a way, he kind of doomed his people, ultimately. Whereas in this case, it was the natural magical energy of the world was changed by the Sundering. And we don't know, one thing we still don't know is where the Dragon Isles are physically.
Yeah, we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, but we don't know where they are. It's quite possible that they were close to Northrend. I mean, that would explain why Wormrest Temple is there.
And why the boneyards of the Dragonflights were there.
The Dragonblight. It would make sense. And also, Malagos's home was in Kuldara. That's where the Nexus is. It would make sense for the Dragon Isles to be somewhere in the vicinity. Especially since, like I said, there was that road going from Ulduar to Wormrest Temple and then south, and then it's gone because Northrend is no longer part of a bigger continent. It's quite possible that the Dragon Isles were another of those Titan facilities along that path, which we've also seen in Xandalar. The Titan Road literally crosses. There's a place, I want to say in Nazmir, where the road starts again.
Yep.
Where you can be like, this is the road that goes to Wormrest. So it's quite possible that the Dragon Isles are just somewhere in that area. We don't know. But they were sealed off because after the Sundering, the magical energies that fueled that area that the dragons were originally from were gone. And so the place was, effectively, the dragons couldn't stay there anyway. And so they allowed the Watchers to seal the place off. There's still a lot more we don't know. But I think that's an interesting idea to start off on, because it does make us wonder, like, the Dragonflight book, and I'm blanking on the name, but Richard Knack wrote it. You remember the one?
I do. I just can't remember the name off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can never remember it either. But in that book, was it Dawn of the Aspects?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Dawn of the Aspects, we see that the five aspects that were there at the time, the first five, were originally proto-drakes living somewhere. And it's never really clear exactly where. But since we know that Galakrond, for instance, his bones are in the Dragonblight, it seems to me pretty likely that the Dragon Isles were originally very close to the Dragonblight.
The other thing that I think should be noted here, too, is just because we know that the Dragon Isles exist doesn't mean that it was... There's a lot we don't know, Matt's right, but it also doesn't necessarily mean that this is the, like, one place where all the dragons came from. Does that make sense? Like, as we've interacted with them over the years, we've seen them have different places of rest. Like, Matt's bringing out with, like, Malagos and having the Nexus. We've seen things like the Crimson Reduff and...
Neltharion had a cave sanctuary.
Neltharion had his own sanctuary as well. Although, as did the Caverns of Time.
We're also seeing that those places might have been established later, because we are seeing that the Dragon Isles are apparently the place where the dragons built their own kingdom. And that's interesting. So they might not, the Dragon Isles might not be their birthplace.
Right. That's what I was getting
at. It might be the place where they started their own kingdom. And what does that mean? What is a dragon kingdom? That's, you know, we've never seen dragons living as like people in a nation. We've always seen them as like aloof beings who show up, tell us we got to do something. Or in the case of the Black Dragonflight, are, you know, crazy for old god juice and want to kill everything. One of the things that's really interesting about the Dragon Isles from the little bit we've seen is that a lot of it is rooted in stuff Neltharion did before he went mad.
Yeah. Which would make a lot of sense considering some of the experimentations and some of the things we see that Neltharion and his children got up to as far as like experimentation with the dragon flights go, and some of the weird creations that they really tried to push are not so far fetched and not so far off from where we see some things that were happening on the Dragon Isles. And like, I'm talking like the Drakthir and things like that.
And one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot, since we're going to talk about this, we've got the original Dragonflights, the Ruby Dragonflight, the Blue Dragonflight, the Emerald Dragonflight, the Bronze Dragonflight, and the Black Dragonflight.
Yep.
But there are other dragons.
Chromatic, Infinite, Netherwing, Nightmare.
Yeah, but some of those are. Yeah, but a lot of those, like the Chromatic and Infinites and the Netherwing and the.
The creations.
I forget what the Twilight ones. They're creations, but there's the Storm Drakes.
I was just going to say Storm's the other one, which we don't know if they're creations or not.
Well, plus, here's a weird thing. You can find Storm Drakes in Skywall.
Yep.
When you go to Skywall, there's Storm Drakes there. But there are also Storm Drakes in Stormheim and Suramar. They just live in the mountains there.
And we do know that Elemental Drakes will be a thing as far as the Dragon Isles are concerned as well.
Yeah. But we're going to see proto dragons that are like all elemental, then the primal elementals, and that's a whole thing that's coming up. So like, what about the earth, like the stone drakes from Earthholm? Are there other
Deepholm?
Like, will we be getting just dragon flights back? Like, will we be getting will we actually kind of get a chromatic dragon flight finally? Because all the dragons will be in it. You know what I mean? Like, that's something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, and I think we spent a lot of time focusing primarily on the five original Dragonflights and then sort of the things that sort of spawned off after them as far as like through those experimentations. But over the years, we've learned so much more exists, that there are so many different things that could potentially be considered Dragonflights in their own right. But we also don't know what existed prior to the raising of the dragon aspects into their primal dragon flights, right?
Mm-hmm,
because exactly. Before this, they were drakes, right? They were
proto dragons. They were exactly proto-dragons. Like the proto dragons. Yeah.
So there's a lot we're going to learn.
It's a little confusing. It's a little confusing because we use the word drake to kind of mean not fully grown dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know what I'm talking about, like the ones people ride, and yet we also kind of use it for proto dragons, and so it does get a little confusing sometimes. And I'm not sure. If I'm pretty sure you can call proto dragons drakes. I think that is definitely an accepted name for them, but it is not something that has a lot of, no one's ever really sat down and said, okay, when we say drake, we mean this.
Mm-hmm.
So that is interesting to think about too.
So there's a lot of things that have happened over the years to the dragons, internally, like within themselves as well. We've talked about events that we've lived through, but there are points in time where in Warcraft's history, things like the Red Dragonflight and the Black Dragonflight, which were all we knew at the time, were embroiled in, for lack of a better term, slavery of dragons. The Black Dragonflight would capture, I believe, Red Dragons for experimentation, primarily because they were so closely tied to life in general. And there's an entire story about how, I believe it was Alexstrasza, was captured and used as basically for rearing whelps for orcs at one point as well. There's a lot of trauma in the Dragonflight, even before they weren't aspects anymore, that at the hands of mortal creatures. And they are complicated and messy, just like we are. Let's talk about the Black Dragonflight, because I think Neltharion is, or Neltharion is probably one of the more interesting aspects, simply because of what wound up happening with their corruption. So Neltharion was the otherwise known as Deathwing. Before becoming Deathwing, was the Warder of the Deep Places, was given dominion over the Earth by Khazgaroth the Shaper. This Dragonflight, because of its affinity for the Earth, was susceptible to the whispering of the Old Gods. Now, the problem with this is that all of the Old Gods trapped inside of the Earth, which was given to their prison, they kind of learned, and we talked about this before, how to rail against their shackles. And this was one of the ways, which of the Old Gods was it? Was it N'Zoth that spoke to Deathwing?
According to Cataclysm, yes, it was N'Zoth who originally spoke to Deathwing and got him on board. N'Zoth is, we see N'Zoth portrayed several times before we see him in Battle for Azeroth. He gets mentioned in Cataclysm, and he's mentioned as the quote unquote paymaster behind Deathwing. That's from a BlizzCon. But we really only start to get a hint of who N'Zoth is in Legion when the Shadow Priest artifact dagger, whose name I can never remember,
Zalatath,
is Mitch's girlfriend. Yes. It talks about how N'Zoth was the least of them, and yet he's the one who's still pulling strings at this point, which is a bit of irony. N'Zoth is apparently, we see throughout N'Zoth's interactions, we see his interaction with Ashara, we see his interaction, at least the results of his interactions, in Nyalotha. N'Zoth is a manipulator. N'Zoth doesn't put themselves out there. N'Zoth lets other people step up and do the work. And that's very apparent in how we see N'Zoth's forces under the command of a couple of Chithraxi basically serving Deathwing on the assault on Wormrest Temple at the end of Cataclysm. So yeah, it's N'Zoth who originally did that. Yep.
And we see how powerful this pull is too, because it's interesting to think like, okay, these are great aspects. These are huge dragons. Neltharion is like this massively powerful creature. How could they possibly be corrupted by something so trapped away, so diminished in power? But then we get to the stories with like Ebonhorn, where part of the reason Ebonhorn couldn't leave High Mountain is because that's where they were protected. They couldn't stray because anything further than that would possibly give them, basically put them back in the sights of the Old God, in this case, N'Zoth, where they would instantaneously be under assault. And we actually do see this when we're at the heart of Azeroth, essentially, in the Heart Chamber. And Ebonhorn comes to aid us by giving us his power when we're trying to work our magic against N'Zoth. It is almost instantaneous as corruption. And
We see it before that.
And we do see it before that as well, yes. Go ahead.
Origin, when you're doing the quests to establish that the High Mountain Tauren have joined the Horde, Ebonhorn goes with them to Thunder Bluff to talk to talk to Bane. And boom, immediately the Old Gods start whispering at him, and he has to go immediately. He has to just leave while they're being attacked by Old God things. So yeah, it's really bad for Ebonhorn.
And it's interesting because it is almost instantaneous. It is violent, and it is almost absolute, because N'Zoth has figured out how to sort of manipulate that tie to the element of Earth through Azeroth itself to sort of rest that control.
I have a theory about that.
Go for it. I'd love to hear it.
It's a Cipher of Damnation.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It's the exact thing that was originally used to control the Elemental Lords. By binding Neltharion so closely to the Earth, he's basically considered an Elemental.
Yeah, he's the closest of the of all of the aspects. He's the closest to an elemental, right? Like none of the others really are, because you have the steward of time, a steward of life, a steward of the dream, and then a steward of magic, and then you have the steward of the element of earth.
And what's interesting about that too is that I bet you 10 to 1 that the primals that we're going to meet in Dragonflight tie into this.
That would make sense. But that aside, that starts a cascading effect that we see for years, whether this is the capturing of Dragonflights by that of the Black Dragons for experimentation. When you go to Blackwing Lair and you start seeing, and Blackwing Descent, and you start seeing what was being done, this is where, we'll use Blackwing Lair, during the Nefarian encounter, during our fight with Nefarian, you see the Drake humanoid things, this first attempt at servants, or at least we think it's the first attempt at creating mindless, brutish servants of the spawn of the Dragonflights. Draconids, thank you. We see that again when we start going into Blackwing Descent and we start seeing the Twilight the Twilight Dragonflight, we start seeing the culmination of all of the genetic splicing and arcane splicing that Nefarian has been doing, that Neltharion was doing beforehand.
But what's interesting about that is that, sure, maybe the Black Dragonflight was first in the fray here, but all the other Dragonflights had Draconids.
They did.
And had the other kind, like General Drakasath version. They had them too, the Dragonkin. So they were, maybe they weren't the ones coming up with this stuff, but they had them. And I think that that's going to tie into the Drakthyr a bit.
And that's what I was going to bring up, because we do see that. This is something that wasn't really talked about, I didn't see, but we do see it if you watch the announcement video for the expansion. You see Draconoids. You see not Drakthyr. You see Draconoids working in what the approximation of like what the Empire run by dragons would look like. You see them laboring. They're walking around, either acting as guards or doing something. They're there. They're present. This is,
yeah,
not,
and they're
new.
Also there if you go to the root to Wormrest Temple.
And they're there, and they're there if you go to the Ruby Respite.
Yeah, the Ruby Sanctum. Yeah, the Ruby, yep. Sanctum. The you know, they're standing as guards when you go down into the chamber with the portal to the various dragon sanctums. They're right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the dragon shrines, they're right there. So everybody has them, and I think that's going to tie into this. We're going to find out more about where the various dragon can come from, including the Drakthyr.
I think so too. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about it, is all the experimentation that we thought was experimentation from like this weird, horrific point that the Black Dragonflight was doing, we think at the behest of N'Zoth, might not have been actual like experimentation aside from creating the Twilight Dragonflight. The Draconoids, those might have been examples of domination or possibly something that they were told to look into, because they were trying to figure out domination magic, which we just figured out ourselves. We just learned about over the course of this last expansion. But if N'Zoth knew about this, which we know that the Void was aware of the Shadowlands beforehand, that could be a key factor of what the Black Dragonflight was actually being tasked to do. Now, to complicate things further, then we have Rathion, who we've talked about a lot, who I believe is possibly Anne's favorite child. But he was born as an uncorrupted, potentially uncorruptible, at least we thought, Black Dragon, reborn and given life as a way of, like, I guess hope would be the best way to put it. Rathion spent a lot of his time trying to figure out who he was, what the Black Dragonflight was, what the future was going to bring, but also murdering corrupted Black Dragons. He killed a lot of them, and I'm pretty sure if he knew that Sebelian existed in Outland, he'd probably go try to murder them in that clutch too, because he's trying to get rid of the impurities. As a matter of fact, when we first have the interaction between Rathion and Ebonhorn, there's a lot of mistrust there from both sides, for obvious reasons. And the fact that they kind of decide to not, like, attack each other is a big step in Rathion's sort of growing up, question mark. But now that the Dragon Isles have been opened back up, now we see that there are Black Drakthyr. There are Black Draconoids there. They do not seem corrupted. Does this mean that Rathion can come and maybe breathe life back into the Black Dragonflight? Is this something where we can see maybe with N'Zoth being eliminated, seems too harsh of a word, put to sleep for a while, or at least not necessarily pushing on the reins? Does the Black Dragonflight have a chance to come back? And I think that's really, I think that's personally fascinating.
Only if their true leader, Baron Sebelian, comes back.
Well, then we'd have to see if Rathian and Sebelian would ever get along. Like I said before.
He'll get along fine when he's, you know, being digested in Sebelian's stomach.
Well, I was going to say, I was pretty sure that if Rathian ever learned of Sebelian's existence in Outland, there could be an attempt there. But the Black Dragonflight has gone through quite a bit and been the catalyst for quite a bit of disruption and a lot of pain to the other Dragonflights. So we'll see what happens there, too. Would the other Dragonflights welcome Rathian back?
Well, there's actually a lot of other stuff to think about. Like, first off, I don't think that domination magic or anything we learned in Shadowlands is going to be particularly big on the story here.
Sure.
Because I don't think it needs to be. I think what we're going to see is these, we've got the primal dragons. That's what they are. They're drakes. They're like the proto drakes from Northrend, but they're tapping into elemental magic. Looking at the concept art, one of the things that the person who created the concept art said was that he wanted them to look like natural disasters. Like the fire one is like a volcano. The wind one is like a tornado. They're like literally natural disasters bearing down on you. And part of me is like, why did these guys get imprisoned? We don't know why. We don't know what they did yet. We know that they were imprisoned, and then they've been there for like the past 10,000 years, locked away.
Were they imprisoned because they were too close to the elementals?
Maybe. Maybe that's how the old gods figured out they could influence dragons in the first place. Maybe it's these guys. You know, who knows? But we also know about these mysterious elemental half-giants, the Jardin, I think they're called. And there, you see their influence in the opening cinematic video, the cinematic for it, because they're the tower that was used to seal off the Dragon Isles, the one that the head Titan Watcher's at, is being overrun by molten lava. The magma is boiling out of the earth and is overrunning the tower, indicating that when the magic came back, those enemies of the dragons also came back, and their first move was to attempt to destroy the Titan facility before the dragons could be summoned back.
Which is it because that we're, and this is something I want to pose a question to, and something I've been thinking about since we saw this. Matt and I have often talked about, you know, where did the Dragonflights get empowered? And I think we're going to have our answer, and I think it's going to be Tearsholt. And I think that's part of what that makes that facility so important. And any of the enemies that would be looking at it would probably want to eliminate the means which potentially the Dragonflights themselves, the aspects, could potentially be powered back up.
Here's the thing about that. We know that the Dragonflights had succession principles.
They did.
Because we saw them get used. We saw Malagos be succeeded by Caligos after Malagos's death. And they had a method to do that. So it's quite possible that on the Dragon Isles, they will not just have the succession protocols, but remember that there was the Nexus had to have some kind of like celestial concordance thing to do it. There was like, you know, they couldn't just do it on a whim. Perhaps that's because they'd lost access to Tearhold.
Yeah.
And they therefore had to come up with an alternate, you know, principle to power it. But right now, we've got Ysera is gone, Malagos is gone, but Caligos is currently the blue aspect, or was the blue aspect before
still is.
They got depowered. So he's still in charge, but he's technically not an aspect. None of them are
right anymore.
But of the originals, three are dead. Malagos, Ysera, and Deathwing. Of the original five Dragonflights, two of them don't have their original leader, and one of them, of those two, no one's even sure if we could even have a leader for it. Like, you know, nobody knows. Does Rathian count? Like, does Rathian get to be leader? That's a big question. But Melithra also is in a weird nebulous position. She's her mother's heir, but she was never affirmed. You know, she was never actually chosen and given the rank of an aspect. Caligos, even now that he's been depowered, can still say, I was, you know, I am the head of this Dragonflight. He was acclaimed it. He won, for lack of a better word, the election. But Melithra is just kind of accepted. She never really got that status. Will they be becoming aspects again? Is that going to be a part of what happens here? Or is this story about how the dragons find a new future? Like, maybe they don't become aspects again. Maybe that's the time of aspects is gone. When they said the age of mortals is at hand, maybe they meant themselves too. Maybe that's, or maybe that's what they're going to discover is true. That they don't get to live forever and be aspects anymore. They live and die like everything else, just at a dragon scale.
Which I think would be fine, because there's another question that's on the table right now that we don't know. At some point during the last several years, starting with, I want to say it was Wrath, where we technically lose the little pocket dimensions that were the brooding or breeding grounds or brood lands or whatever.
It was in the Thrall novel. It was in the Thrall novel.
Yeah. But we actually,
not Wrath.
But no, but we participated in it. I want to say in Wrath.
Well, we went into the black. I can't remember. I want to say the like Ebon, but that's not the right word. But we went into the Sanctum and we fought Sartarian.
Yep.
And that's where we basically, that was their place of eggs and hatching and all that stuff. And then we went to the Ruby Dragon, the Ruby Sanctum, and saw Obsidian Sanctum. The first one was the Obsidian Sanctum, and the second one was the Ruby Sanctum. We went in there and saw the place where Ysera's clutches are hatched, but we never saw the eggs.
Correct.
Yeah, they were not seen.
One of the things that what I'm alluding to is here, there's this pervasive thought, and I'm not sure if they ever really addressed it, but that the dragons can't reproduce anymore, or at least don't have a place to lay their clutch of eggs.
Oh, yeah. We know that they said something along those lines in Legion, and they were talking about it before, but I know that in Legion you get, like, specifically the blue dragons are like, yeah, what do we do here? We've got this last clutch, and then we got nothing. And that's the last time that was brought up.
So I think maybe that becomes something we talk about here. And that's one of the things I'm most excited about, because yes, maybe they don't get to live forever. And dragons already live an extended, a really long period of time whenever you talk about anything sort of like fantasy related. But what if they find a way to move forward from all of the trauma that they've had, find a way to have children again, find a way to rejoin the time of mortals? Because that was the big thing. Like you talk about at the end of Cataclysm, it's the statement of the time of dragons is over, the time of mortals is now. There's nothing that says that dragons can't be mortals too. They already pattern a lot of what they do parallel to how mortals live. This just sort of embraces it further. They already take on our aspects. They already hide in plain sight as if they were, you know, one of our peoples. Why not allow them to sort of have that full coming of circle where they can start having a society again and start moving forward? So what do you think the next flight we should talk about? Do you think we should talk about the Emerald Dragon flight and what happened there?
No, absolutely not. We just leave that. Nope. Nothing about the Emerald Dragon flight. The Emerald Dragon flight, don't know nothing about it. We can talk about anyone you want. I think if you want to talk about the Emerald Dragon flight, they're the ones who are kind of in the most weirdly, like, I don't want to say precarious, but I can't think of a better word. Like, we see at the end of when you're doing the quests in Battle for Azeroth, and you're going to get the remnants of the power of each Dragonflight, and kind of revealing that that power is still there, even though the aspects seem to be gone, they've given up their power. The power of the Titans originally invested in the Dragonflights still seems to be there.
They're powerful,
and that's interesting. Yes. And when you go to the Greens, you go to where they're currently fighting in Val Shirah, and you meet up with Melithra, who is the de facto leader after Ysera's death. I don't know. Like, should we go back to like that? That was a big deal.
Yeah,
in Legion.
I think so.
Basically, after Cataclysm, all the dragon aspects and Thrall got together and fought Deathwing and ultimately kill Deathwing at the cost of their aspect power. Each of them sacrificed being an aspect in order to ensure that Deathwing wasn't just dead. He was really absolutely super dead. And I was actually really sad we never ran into Deathwing in the afterlife, quite frankly. That was a really bad decision, in my opinion. Dead definitely should have been some Lotharian. It would have been great if we turned out one of the Kyrian was Lotharian. But anyway, we at the end of that, Cataclysm happens. The Dragonflights no longer have aspects. But the people who were the dragons that were the aspects are still there. Like, you know, Alexstrasza is still leading the Reds, and so forth. The problem with the Emerald Dragonflight was Ysera was always kind of tangled up in what was going on in other worlds anyway, like the Emerald Dream.
Yeah, the Emerald Dragonflight was always sort of removed, right?
Yeah, and so in Legion, we see the attack on Valshara by corrupted Satyr, who are like basically working for the Legion again, although it does kind of feel an awful lot like they're kind of backstabbing the Legion for the old gods at the same time. But regardless, Xavius, the first Satyr, who is serving, apparently he's serving Nazoth and the Legion at the same time. It's really up there. It's pretty iffy. He ultimately manages to corrupt Ysera herself because she's not an aspect anymore and she can't really prevent it. He uses a corrupted tear of a loon.
Yep.
And uses that to corrupt Ysera. And it's only cleansed of that corruption when she dies, because apparently Alun is so heartbroken at the sight of poor dead Ysera that she cleanses the tear of Alun with her own tears, because it starts raining, and lifts her up bodily into the heavens, and where we then next see her in Shadowlands, where her spirit has been sent to Ardenweald. Possibly, there's this whole bit where when Alun finally actually manifests through to Tyrande and is talking to the Winter Queen, she even says, "I sent my people to you." So it's possible that Ysera and all the dead Night Elves were intended to go to Ardenweald originally, as opposed to where they would have normally gone. And that there's a whole thing about that. But that's the place we are right now. Ysera exists in the Shadowlands, but there's no chance of her coming back, because she's been bound to the Shadowlands. She's been bound to Ardenweald. And that means that the Emerald Dragonflight on Azeroth is basically, you know, kind of like they have Mylithra, who's doing her best, but Mylithra was never imbued with the aspect power and thus not the knowledge of an aspect. They also gained more than just power from the investiture. They also gained knowledge, wisdom, understanding of what the Titans knew. And she never got that either. So that's the situation the Emeralds find themselves in, which is why I don't know that I want them to become aspects again. And I don't know what will happen on that front. But I would like it if Mylithra got some story here, because Mylithra has been in this position since the end of the Battle for Azeroth, where she's the de facto head of the Dragonflight. But what does that mean? When she was never an aspect, she was never the appointed leader. You know, she never achieved that position. It just sort of happened. She was forced to do it, not that she was chosen to do it or even wanted to do it. And so I want to see, like, are we going to find out, like, what's Mylithra's story in this expansion? What happens with her? What happens with the Emerald Dragonflight? What role do they have now? We found out that the Shadowlands exist. We found out that Ardenweald is a very big part of the cycle of death and birth and resurrection.
And tied to the Emerald Dream in a very, very deep way.
So what is the Emerald Dragonflight doing now? Are they communing with Ysera? Because, you know, she's reachable. Or at least for a while she was. And that's the other thing. When we close that hole in the sky over Northrend, does that seal away the Shadowlands again? Because before it was almost impossible to get there. Like, it was very difficult to reach through the veil. It took all of Helia's knowledge to do it in the past. When the Lich King was looking through using the Helm of Domination, he only got little glimpses and visions, you know? So does that mean that they know Ysera's there? They know that she's part of Ardenweald. Can they talk to her? Can she talk to them? You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff to this that we don't know what the Emerald Dragonflight's role will be. We know that they're going to be tied into some of the story, because it's even brought up that the Centaur that live in the Dragon Isles, like, live in the same area as the Emerald Dragonflight, and that they basically, there are planes that the Centaur live on, and the dragons are like, yeah, we don't care about that. We're going to live here in these groves and grottos, and you just do whatever. And that's like, what's the deal with that? Like, what's going on there? Like, do they coexist? Do they not coexist? And there's still a ton of possibility here that I'm really interested in seeing.
I would agree. And I think there's a lot of, with the Emerald Dragonflight, especially now that it would be interesting to see where the story takes them, especially after all the events that they've had to partake on. And let's not forget, like, not just the death of Ysera, but the corruption, the Emerald Nightmare, how far that pushed things back, how hard we had to fight to get rid of the Nightmare, that we now know that N'Zoth was part and parcel with orchestrating, and whether Xavius was actually working with the Legion or whether it was just an opportunistic strike. I don't think we ever really got clarification on that. I don't think he really was working with the Legion.
No one. Well, he certainly seemed to be at least using the Legion attack as a pretext, yeah, or a means to an end. Whether or not he was actually part of the Legion is debatable.
And the other thing that I think is interesting about this is, because of the nature of the dream and the Emerald Dragonflight, there is also something else that they are sort of tied to intrinsically: the World Trees. And we just had a recent story event, very, very fresh in a lot of players' minds, where one of them burned down. Now that they're sort of have the Emerald Dream back, now that things are, I don't want to say calming down, but now that Shadowlands is coming to a close, how does this, like, is this something that now has importance again? And we know that the World Trees were important for many, many reasons. They were often used as, like, caps for gigantic fonts of power or places of really big important significance. And we know that despite being some of them being dead, that they can come back. Look at the one at Hyjal. We know that it's been restored. We see it. We interact with it. It's not necessarily completely blown up anymore like it used to be. The one in Northrend that the Fearbulg are living in is starting to sprout again. There, does this now have an impact? Is there now a purpose for the Emerald Dragonflight to steward those? Are they still important? Are they necessary for the healing of Azeroth? And so, and that's another thing. We talk about how much trauma Azeroth has gone through. The Emerald Dragonflight and the Red Dragonflight being stewards of the Emerald Dream and stewards of life tend to be more tied up in the healing of the land. Now that they're back, now that they have access to their to whatever the Titan facility gives them, potentially, or we assist them in getting that.
Well, actually, that actually brings up something.
Go for it.
One of the things we're told is that the reason that the Dragon Isles are getting their magic back after all this time is that Azeroth is healing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, does that mean it took that Azeroth is healing from its recent troubles, or is it healing from the original sundering?
And we know that they've been gone for almost 10,000 years, so it feels like the original sundering.
Yeah. And so what does that mean for Azeroth's current state? Like, we basically saw Azeroth get really badly injured during the end of Legion. And all of Battle for Azeroth was all about it. And at the end of Shadowlands, we find out that the entirety of Icecrown Citadel was originally built to help as a means to try to drain the world soul of Azeroth and use it to power, like, the recreation of existence itself in Zareth Mortis. Now that that's done, like, we've stopped that from happening, we've effectively destroyed the machinery, is that something that has been draining Azeroth? And is that the cause of the planet's rebounding? Like, is it literally a case of, you know, like, no one knew that the planet had this new ongoing wound that's been having since the end of the Third War, and now that that's over, some of the power that was being drained away can now return to the world?
Yeah, that's been living rent-free in my brain since seeing the end cinematic for Shadowlands, or at least going through the encounter with the Jailer, is, did we accidentally fix something we didn't know needed to be fixed? Was this what Azeroth was trying to tell us through Magni all this time? And is that potentially why, when we were getting together and doing all of the stuff to link the Titan facilities together again for the origination beam at the end of Battle for Azeroth, that Northrend wasn't involved? Because don't forget, like, Alduar, Memron said no.
Cut he off. Just say no. He hung up.
Yeah, he hung up and said, "Yeah, no, we're not helping you. Bye." Which seems counterintuitive, but we also know that that's where one of the Watchers that was set over the aspect of life under Aenar was. That's where Freya lived, right? We know that that facility was important. We know that there was importance there. Is now that we've eliminated the threat of Northrend, the threat of the Ice Crown Citadel, is that now doing its job that it couldn't do all those years ago? Is that facility finally able to complete what it needed to do? Because it seemed rather odd that that facility would be there right next door to Ice Crown Citadel like it was, and we never learned what the truth of the facility was.
What was it for before they used it to imprison Yogg-Saron?
Exactly.
Yeah, we don't know. We know that these facilities had a purpose before they were used to imprison the various old gods. And part of that purpose was the origination of Azeroth. It was the healing of the wound that was created when the the original wound that created the Well of Eternity. The Sundering exacerbated that wound. And what happened recently wasn't making it any better. It's quite possible, though, that by getting rid of Ice Crown Citadel, what you're saying is it's quite possible that the Titan network is managing to come fully online now.
Or at least that's what Mimron might have been doing.
Or trying to do.
Or trying to do.
Or for that matter, you know, it's also possible that, you know, they're all secretly, corrupted and evil now. Who knows?
Who knows? But now with another Titan facility, the reason I bring this up is because now another Titan facility is back online. And it's in response to... Tearhold is back online. And the guess is that...
Oh, I wonder if that's Aldoris.
That's what I was just going to say. If it's one of the other Aldas that we didn't know existed yet, or that we knew existed but didn't know the name of. The location of. We made the guess that Tearhold is the location and possibly the source of the Titans empowering the Dragonflights where it actually occurred, or at least that's what I think. And I think that's a pretty safe bet, at least as far as speculation goes. But what else was that facility for, if, or was that its only purpose? And if it wasn't, is it feeding power back into the system? Are these locations starting to tie themselves back together as they come back online? And is this latest point of it?
Yeah, I mean, we got Aldir back, and Mother is now active.
Yep.
And Mother is tied into the Titan facility at the heart of Azeroth,
yep,
which is itself within range of Uldum. And we know we're going to see Uldumon in this expansion. There's a new wing of Uldumon that we're going to see. That's going to be one of the new dungeons. And why would you go back to Uldumon? Like, what's there about Uldumon that makes you want to go back to that? That fascinates me, because Uldumon is where Arcadis went when Tyr was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And we know we thought we knew where Tyr died. And there's some debate about that now. I don't think that that figure we see on the seat in Tearhold is Tyr.
No.
Because we know where Tyr died. Tyr died in Tyr's Fall. Like, literally, Tyr's Fall. That's where Tyr died. But that facility has been discovered. Now we've discovered, we know where Aldir was. We know.
And if it's not, obvious, the reason that we're bringing up Titans with the discussion of dragons is because the dragons are inexplicably tied. I shouldn't say inexplicably. They are intrinsically tied.
Yeah, inextricable was what you were looking for.
Yeah. They're tied to Tyr. And Tyr, these locations that are coming up are important to the story of Tyr and him as a watcher and what happened there. And so as a result of that, it becomes important to what happened with the dragons. So I don't even think that the dragons didn't really know what happened to Tyr either, right? Like, that was something that they never volunteered this information.
No, they didn't know, or they didn't say. It's quite possible that they didn't know, because Tyr seemed during the whole incident of Tyr's death is tied up in Loken's machinations, mm-hmm, and the discovery that the old gods had corrupted at least one of the Watchers. And Tyr, Arcadis, and Irania grabbed the discs of Nerganon and took them because they knew that Loken was going to edit them, and therefore they had to get... Oh, hello! That's why you go back to Uldumon, because that's where the actual discs of Nerganon are.
Uh-huh.
The ones up in Northrend are edited by Loken. For instance, he calls himself the Prime Designate in them, but he's not. He never was.
And
he edited them so he could, push that case.
And what was probably contained inside of those discs?
Well, one possibility might be how to make it aspects.
Yep.
But another thing that comes to mind is when you go to original Uldumon, you find out something that I've been talking about for years. Remember we had that discussion a long time ago about the Curse of Flesh?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's pointed out is that it is unusual to use stone and rock to create the Titan's servitors that we see. It was unusual to Azeroth, and they did it on Azeroth to create creations who are durable enough to deal with the old god corruption. It's straight up said in Uldumon. It's never said up in Ulduar. It's not said in the Halls of Lightning or the whole encounter where the lore thing, the tribunal, I cannot say the word tribunal today. The whole encounter with them where it talks about the necrophotic entities does not mention that it is unusual to have done this, but it's said in Uldumon. But if we now know that the Uldumon discs are the actual Dissonant Organon, then it implies that there is an alternate path that is the intended path for Azeroth, and it isn't big rocky people.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the Terse of Flesh isn't something that the old gods created. It's inherent obsolescence planned for the Titan Forged.
Because
it's what they usually do.
I said that years ago, where they're right there with you. But I
we were talking about that because of Uldumon is the reason that I started bringing it up.
But,
and what if that's why we're going to Uldumon now?
And what if it has tied in with the aspects? Because again, look at what the aspects were. Look what the dragonflights were stewards over. Arcane energy, time, the Emerald Dream, and nature, and life. And let's talk about the other one, which was, again, back to the Black Dragonflight, the element of Earth, the element that the Titan servitors were made of.
Oh. But now that we know that there's these primal dragons that are coming back, and that are like the rivals of the aspects that they were imprisoned, what if that's the evolution that the dragons were going through earlier? Because we know that the dragons were the proto-drakes, the proto-dragons, the ancestors of dragons, were going in a certain direction. And Tyr picked a bunch and created the aspects out of them in the same way that Odin created the Stormforged.
Uh-huh.
So what if aspects and the dragons that they created are like constructs?
Yep.
And then that's why they couldn't have kids. And that's why there needs to be something new changed in order to make them able to have clutches again.
Which has having going back and getting the blueprints of Tyr's design, because Tyr is the one that came up with how to empower them in the first place, would allow us to actually go back and do, or at least find out, especially after they gave up so much of themselves and that power in exchange with the Dragon Soul in order to defeat Deathwing. What if that's why that all happened? It wasn't necessarily a corruption. It wasn't necessarily a destruction of their ability, but it was an unforeseen consequence of essentially activating an obsolescence that wasn't planned for them. So we have to go back and edit the code. And the only way to do that is to find the source material. We're going to see a lot of really interesting stuff happening with the dragon. Yeah, the
dragons. We have no idea. Like we haven't even talked about three of them yet. Like we haven't even talked about the blue, red, or bronze dragonflights. We just got through two.
And I mean, we can talk to a couple of these real quick just for the sake of complete, or like, I wouldn't even say like completion because
Joe,
yes,
let's just accept that we're doing a two-parter here. Don't even try.
Yeah. Or this is going to be a two-parter.
Yeah. It's a two-parter now. Just accept it.
Especially
we can try to do that. Like in 5 minutes, we're going to cover three dragonflies. Come on.
But it is important to note that like when we talk about not just the dragonflights and the story that's to come with them, or potential for it, it is always going to be tied up very heavily with the Titans and Azeroth itself. And the further we get, the further along we move, the more that's becoming more apparent and how deep that story goes. We talked about getting a conclusion, a crescendo to the dragon story, because let's be honest here, the end of Dragon Soul did not feel good. The end of that raid felt awful. And everything that's happened to the Dragonflight since then has continued to be awful. We owe them. we owe them fixing a lot of this problems because they went out of their way to do stuff for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about it too. The dragons were these, you know, they weren't stupid or simple-minded, but they were these creatures who had barely begun climbing into their, like, power. And then they got taken and used by Tyr to save Azeroth. And it was because they were part of Azeroth in the way that the Titan Forged weren't. They saw Azeroth as beings from it, as beings of it. And the Titan Forged, meanwhile, have been turning into beings that are part of Azeroth.
Yep.
You know, we've got the humans and the dwarves, and possibly even the trolls are descended from beings that were Titan Forged initially. The Mogu. We see this with the Tolvir. And now it would be a nice thing to see the dragons get to return to their legacy as part of Azeroth. That would be something I would be interested in seeing.
Indeed. But I think that's going to do it for today, folks. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. Again, we continue to stand with the employees of Activision Blizzard, as well as all the game companies out there that are working on unionizing, trying to create a safer work environment and a better tomorrow. I apologize for a little more disjointed or casual episode today, folks. There's just too much to really talk about, and it's always kind of fun, at least from my end, to kind of see where the conversation goes, to start with the root idea of let's talk about the Dragonflights and the next expansion and kind of see where things happen. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well. If you have thoughts on it, please be sure to share them with us. Again, if you are listening to our podcast on any of the reviewable sites like Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify, be sure to send us to give us a like or to give us a rating, comment on the episodes, or share them with your friends. That simple act does help us quite a bit. If you have questions about the Dragonflight or the Titans or the coming expansion that you do want us to speculate on or try to answer to the best of our ability, we will go ahead and send those questions in, and you can send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com, or you can also send them into our Discord channel. We have one for Patreon Q and podcast questions, as well as one for Q and podcast question section. If you can't support us on Patreon, again, we understand. But little things like that do help us out. Just let us know what show it's for, share them with your friends, and we will continue to try to make the content that we hope you enjoy, because gosh darn it, we like making it. But I think that's going to do it for us this week, folks. We'll see you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.